Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
And welcome to Overnight America. Wow, we're just one day away from what could be the most historical Blues game. The one you've been waiting for. And you know what? I know it's on everyone's mind. So we're going to try not to jinx anything. It's coming back here. And we got a lot to get to on the show today. Rich Rubino is going to join us, author of American Politics on the Rocks. Kind of an interesting look, too. I asked him about Pete Buttigieg in South Bend. Is that typical? You don't normally see mayors of small towns getting so much traction. And he said, well, actually. Well, so we'll get his take on that coming up. And man, we got a lot to get to. We'll also hook up with AccuWeather to preview some of the storms that are going to be coming through here. Mother threatening kids, but I don't know if she's necessarily a villain. You'll have to judge for yourself. Very special hour in studio. We get this every once in a while. It's not too often we have a live guest in studio this late at night. It is 10:08 in St. Louis, Missouri. Author Jan Jacoby. The book is called Young Lincoln, and I'm so glad you decided to come on here to Overnight America.
Well, Ryan, it worked out nicely. You've been trying to have me on the show, and the Blues have been intervening. Thank goodness.
Well, every time, there was one time we thought we were going to bring you on, and the Blues ended up playing, and then you went on a school trip because you're a school teacher. Where do you teach?
Right. I'm presently teaching at St. Michael's School in Clayton. I teach 7th and 8th grade humanities. Before that, I was came to St. Louis in 1982 to come as head of 5th, 6th, 7th grade at St. Louis Country Day. When the schools merged, I became head of middle school. 31 years there, was going to retire. And St. Michael's School has just been a blessing for me.
Can't retire. Just you keep getting pulled right back in. I thought every teacher's most glorious day was that day you get to retire.
No, you know, I'd be perfectly honest with you and say I almost dread that day.
Wow, why?
Well, because I'll just miss the kids and school. I've been in it all my life, and there's just so much action there. It's a fascinating place.
A lot has probably changed since you started teaching, I'm going to guess.
I started teaching in 1973.
Yeah.
And yes, it's there are changes. There are some constants. The one constant I've always been with middle school kids, they are still the same curious, open, genuine people they always were.
Yeah,
they can be pretty hard on each other, but we help them with that. The difference probably is the impact of all the social media.
Right. And I'm holding a copy of your first book, Young Lincoln. Is this a required reading in the classroom? Do you assign this?
Has been. It has been, yeah. Actually, the story on the book is that my kids at MICDS told me I should write this book.
Oh, cool.
Because they knew I was interested in Lincoln, and they said, can you recommend a book to us? And I said, well, you know, I really can't because they're for elementary school and high school, but not one for middle school. So they said, you should write it.
Why the fascination with young Lincoln when most people are fascinated with his presidency?
Ryan, what's in that book, the heart of that book is Lincoln in New Salem. New Salem, up 20 miles to the northwest of Springfield, is where it's a frontier village, maybe about 100, 125 people that he came to when he was 22. When he came there, he referred to himself as a piece of floating driftwood. He left 6 years later, elected to the Illinois State Legislature, and licensed to practice law in the state of Illinois. So it's a very important period in his life.
Yeah, he failed a few times before that happened.
Probably
more than a few times.
We know that. We do know that.
But it eventually worked out for him. What's kind of neat is when you hold a physical copy of your book, so it's called Young Lincoln, and author Jan Jacoby joining us in studio from Reedy Press here. Doesn't it feel cool to hold a physical copy of something you've worked on. That's got to be a really neat feeling.
It takes your breath away.
Yeah.
When you first see it. And as you remarked tonight, I really appreciate it. The cover that Ed Kaler did for Reedy Press is remarkable. And I had not seen the cover until I saw the book for the first time. And it just, it takes your breath away.
Yeah. You said this book almost never happened. You tried to get it published and you had to actually go down your own route in order to make it work. And maybe had a few forks in the road that ended up working out in the end.
I was lucky. When I finished the first draft of it, took 2 years to write it. I came from New York. I had friends in New York, editors and publishers and agents, sent it to all of them, and it was the big R from every last one of them. I knew Josh Stevens. In fact, he'd been a former student of mine at Reedy Press, and I said, Josh will do it. So I took it to Josh, and he looked at it for a couple of weeks and said, no, I don't want it. And I said, what's the problem? And he said, well, if this is for middle school kids, there are too many flashbacks, and they'll get lost in these rabbit holes you have. And so I said, Josh, if I write it linear, will you look at it? And he said, yeah. And then it took him 2 days to reject it. That time, we were 3.5 years out. And then a real change that came that really made all the difference is that my daughter was working on a project for Josh. And the two of them said he ought to try that thing first person, which is in the voice of Abraham Lincoln himself. And of course, I said, there's no way anybody can do that. But 6 months later, I tried, and it changed it around.
Well, how many times did Abraham Lincoln run for office and lose? It was 3 or 4, wasn't it? Something like that?
Yes, but it's not always known that he ran for the state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And if you include those, he lost the first time for the state legislature. But then there are 4 successful elections and re-elections.
Yeah.
After 8 years in the legislature, he basically moved away from that. Ultimately, Abraham Lincoln's goal, and it's a fascinating thing, his goal was to be a senator from Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And he was passed over in 1855. It's a long, complicated story of that. But of course, we know he lost to Stephen Douglas in 1858. So those are the two key elections that he lost. And he really did not expect to have the opportunity to run for president.
Yeah.
But it came, and he was ready for it.
Yeah. Lots of stories out there about Abraham Lincoln, and author Jan Jacoby joining us. The book is called Young Lincoln. I want to ask you about some of those stories and some of the things you discovered while writing this book. There's probably some great young Lincoln stories you can share here tonight on the program.
There are many of them. One that I've been telling, it's in the book there, and I take it around to schools because everybody thinks Abe Lincoln was this perfect young man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he and his buddies, one night when they were living in Indiana, 3-4 other friends went on a raccoon hunt.
Ooh, save the story. I want to hear this right after the break. And a little bit of trivia. What was Abraham Lincoln's dog's name? Save that for after the break, too, because go ahead and guess if you want to. But we're going to come back with author Jan Jacoby, the author of Young Lincoln, local educator here in the St. Louis region over in Clayton. And this is a fascinating take on Abraham Lincoln. We'll continue next on Overnight America KMOX. And welcome back with author Jan Jacoby. And the book is Young Lincoln, a look at Abraham Lincoln's younger years. I will mention this real quick. I did see the chair he was sitting in when he was assassinated. That's at Henry Ford Museum up near Dearborn, close to Detroit. And a couple of different artifacts that they have there, too. Do you ever go to some of these Lincoln museums to check out some of the things they have there?
Yes, the one in Springfield, Ryan, is an excellent museum. That was built, I think, maybe now 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It was designed by Gio Obata from HOK,
mm-hmm.
the museum and the library. The museum is wonderful.
Yeah.
And the sites in Springfield, interestingly enough, you always had the home, the law office, the old state capitol, and the tomb. But when you took kids up there on field trips, there was nothing to tie them together. And now, if you start in the museum, it really, then from there, you go to the other sites. That museum is a very, it's a real treasure.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Did someone try to steal Abraham Lincoln's corpse?
That's correct.
Yeah. That happens. Like, I remember that happened to Charlie Chaplin. Every once in a while, you find those things. Man, I don't get it. Why would someone think that's
Who knows? That's why? That's a Lincoln story. I don't know as well as I should, but I've got a friend who is very well versed on that story. So I know that story is true. And actually, if you go to the tomb, I think the reburied Lincoln is about 10 feet under the ground under a huge slab of marble.
Yeah, you'd have to. Well, and something I read a story too. His assassin Booth, apparently there was some discrepancy if he escaped or if they had someone else there that took his place and if they had the right body or not. But I read a story that his corpse, they took it around like a circus show to show people, here's the person that killed Abraham Lincoln. It mysteriously disappeared and they believe it's in a private collection somewhere. Isn't that kind of weird?
That's a new one for me. I have trouble. Actually, it's interesting because we talked about going to Washington. I actually have a little. I haven't been to Ford's Theater.
Oh, no.
And I'm not sure I really want to go. Ironically, I've been to the Peterson House, which is right next door.
Oh, okay.
I after Lincoln is dead, it's to me, that's such a sad moment. I don't think I want to go too much further with the body and with the assassin.
Let's look at Young Lincoln is the name of the book, and Jan Jacoby in studio with us here on Overnight America. So quick thing, you have on the cover a young Lincoln. He has a sack that he has over his shoulder running down a trail at night. You see kind of a shooting star, and he's got a little dog next to him. What was Lincoln's dog's name?
All right, see if anybody knows it out there. Lincoln's dog's name was Honey.
Honey. Great name. Good name for a dog.
Good name for a young boy's dog.
Yeah. And what's the story about the raccoon hunt? You said they were back in Indiana, and there was a young Lincoln story you were going to share.
All right. Now, they're about 16 years old, and Lincoln at this point has a stepbrother, and the two of them sneak out of the log house about 2 in the morning, and they're going on meet up with two other friends to go on a raccoon hunt. So as they're just about out the door, his father's little dog, Joe, wakes up and is just about ready to go. So John D., who is his stepbrother, grabs Joe and just has him shut up so he can't say anything. So as they get out the door, Lincoln says, well, are we going to let him go? And John D. says, no, we're going to teach this guy a lesson.
This dog a lesson, okay?
So they meet up with the other two. They go on the coon hunt, and pretty quickly they corner a coon, and one of them basically shoots him in the head, and they got a dead coon there. So at that point, the boys say, one of them says, you know what we ought to do with old Joe? Here's what we're going to do. One of us is going to skin that coon, and then we're going to take that skin and we're going to tie it around Joe.
The dog.
The dog.
Like almost giving it a little jacket at that point.
That's it. And then John D. has a lace in his pocket, so they tie the thing around Joe. And then Joe shoots off back into back towards. Right. And the boys stay out another couple hours. About what they don't have is a six-pack, because they sure could use it. But
real late at this point, it's almost you're going to see the sun come up. Before
yeah, pretty close. And so, and as Lincoln and John D. sort of head back with the sun coming up, they see his father camped out on the front step. But in front of his father is essentially all sorts of bits of animal flesh. And what has happened is old Joe, with that raccoon skin on him, was torn to bits by the other dogs.
Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, no!
There it is. And that story, by the way, I tell that story to kids for a couple of reasons.
What, you tell that story to kids?
Yeah, no, the kids, yeah, right. Well, number one, it's the frontier. It's pretty gruesome on the frontier.
Well, yeah, sure.
Right. Number two is that old Abe ain't so perfect.
Yeah, I guess that.
You know, he goes along with the boys, and ironically, Lincoln, prior to that, had he's all sorts of stories about him. The other boys want to light turtles on fire, and he says, don't do that.
Yeah.
So he's pretty good about that. But, you know, the pressure is pretty strong, and he goes along with it. My editor wanted to yank that story right out of there. She says, too gruesome. But I it's funny, working with an editor, I accepted 99% of what you wanted, but that 1% I had to stand pretty firm.
Yeah, that was a story you wanted to include in the book Young Lincoln. Jan Jacoby joining us here on Overnight America. How do kids react to that story? Do the boys love it and the girls hate it?
You got it.
Just like that.
You got
it. So that's kind of a surprise. If you're going through the book and you're capturing maybe their reaction when they hear this story. Generally, what's the reaction, and what's the age group that you read it to?
That one I read to 7th and 8th grade. I think 6th grade's a little young for that, or even 5th graders. But the reaction, first of all, you know they're listening.
Yeah.
And actually, I've taken it, on the book, it's about a page. And what I work with 8th graders on is I've got it down as a case study. Mm-hmm. And the case study is peer pressure on the frontier.
Ah.
So I doll up the thing and then stop and say, well, what should Abe do now? Mm-hmm. When John D. walks out with a dog, I mean, he could say, yeah, come on, leave the dog here.
Yeah.
Then when they get there and plug the raccoon and have this idea of wrapping the skin around,
yeah,
he could say, you know, guys, you know, maybe that's not a good idea. But there are about two or three points where, in fact, I will ask kids when I'm doing the case study, what should Lincoln do? And when I did this at Friday at White Island Middle School, these were actually sixth graders now come to think of it. Mm-hmm. One of them had one idea and the other one had a different idea right next to him. And it was such fun to see kids taking different things he could do.
How do we even know this story? Was it something that Lincoln shared at some point or one of the other kids shared? Because this is one of those stories I would think that would get just forgotten over time. But somehow this had to have been documented.
Excellent question, and I have to say that when you're dealing with a young Lincoln, your source material is material that Lincoln's third law partner, William Herndon, collected after Lincoln was killed.
Mm.
At 1865, Herndon goes around to everybody in Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois who knew Lincoln, takes personal testimony. There are letters that go to Herndon, and he's got a pile of material that is huge. Herndon was notoriously disorganized, and eventually what happens is this stuff works its way into the Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Two scholars up at Knox College, Doug Wilson and Rod Davis, got it down to about, that book is about 800 pages, mm-hmm. It's called Herndon's Informants. That's what's in there are the testaments from all the different people who knew him. Now, you have to be careful because that stuff was taken 30 years after it happened.
I see.
And so Doug Wilson says that if you get corroborative recollection, mm-hmm. that is to say several people mm-hmm. Tie it together and say this, and you get that on. The stories that I chose for young Lincoln are the most reliable stories that I found. The fiction of young Lincoln is that that Abraham Lincoln is telling this story himself. Mm-hmm. That's the novel.
You've seen a lot of kids, you know, 30 plus years of teaching, and you're looking at some of them close to the age of what you're writing about in young Lincoln. I'm wondering how many Lincolns you see. Like, do you see like, wow, that's something Abraham Lincoln would do, or that's kind of phased out and it's only something you would have seen, you know, 100 years ago?
Ryan, you do see, and it's this is going to be a complicated thing to say here.
Should we say it? Save it for the next segment?
No. Yeah. It's a simple idea, but I talked to the kids at White Down. Said, what is it about Lincoln that really grabs you? And I said, it's essentially his goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to them, you know, in this world, you don't find too many good people. Not when you get out of school in the big wide world. To find a genuinely good person is quite a treasure. And so I do see, I have to say, in my middle school years, I've seen some treasures of kids who have genuine goodness inside them.
Yeah. What do you think would happen if the news networks existed and found out about that Lincoln story if he was running today? I don't even want to know.
Right. Yeah.
Well, sometimes I think this whole idea of writing about Abe Lincoln when he was young, and you say you focus mostly on the years 22 and younger.
Yes, it starts off probably when he's about 5 or 6 and goes to, and it finishes actually when he's 28. The end line is when he leaves New Salem. And I'm fortunate enough, the book has done very well. It actually won a couple of awards I can tell you about when we get back.
Yeah, let's do that. And I also want to know if there's any myths that you came across, things that are commonly associated with Abe Lincoln that aren't necessarily true.
Ooh.
if anything that you've heard, someone brought up, oh, I heard this story once, and then through your research found out maybe that's not accurate. Maybe we can look at some of those things too. An author, Jan Jacoby, in the book is Young Lincoln. And it's fascinating to me, and it's great that you're introducing this to a younger generation in a way that they can apply it, the ideas, the thoughts into their own lives, make it easy for them to read. And it's really cool that a book like this even exists, because mostly when you find books about Abe Lincoln, you know, obviously it's looking at his presidency, post-presidency, you know, the assassination, when it comes to the politics, when it comes to the slavery, when it comes to the Civil War. It's important to look back at the origin stories too and what actually made a person. So let's talk more about that coming up next too on Overnight America KMOX.
This is Overnight America with Ryan Recker on St. Louis's News Radio KMOX.
We're joined with local author and educator Jan Jacoby, author of Young Lincoln. It's a pleasure to have him in late night on KMOX. It's not often we have guests that are willing to actually sit down in the studio. We can talk Lincoln for an hour, which is pretty neat. Are there any historical Lincoln sites around St. Louis? Something, because, you know, we talk about Springfield and you look at Illinois and Indiana, but was there anything significant from this area?
There is, Ryan, and I'm pleased to say for me, and hopefully for my readers, that Young Lincoln has done well enough that Reedy Press has asked me to write a second book.
Oh, cool.
Which will be Lincoln's Years in Springfield. Mm-hmm. And in that book, there will be a story. I've actually been thinking, how can I make Lincoln's middle age interesting for mm-hmm. our young readers? And there's a wonderful story about how Lincoln was challenged to a duel.
Oh.
And it's a long story as to how it happened. But in any event, as it continued, Lincoln, since he had been challenged, was able to choose the weapon.
Oh.
And so
Lincoln, is that how the rules are, the etiquette? If someone challenges you, you pick the weapon.
I believe that's the way it used to work. So Lincoln, being very tall and having a long reach and having a wonderful strength in his arms, chose broadswords.
Oh.
Cavalry broadswords.
Broadsword.
And I do think that scared his opponent. Yeah. But in any event, it got to the point where they actually, Lincoln and James Shields from Illinois, went over to a place called Bloody Island. Bloody Island is off the Mississippi, off Alton, and it is part of Missouri. Mm-hmm. I have a friend in Alton who said he'd be willing to take me for a tour of Bloody Island. And so I look forward to that. So in any event, well, what happened is they ended up, the seconds ended up settling it. And so there was it. But
he was there.
He was, they were ready to, Lincoln had been challenged. He chose the weapons. They had a date. They went there.
Bloody Island.
Dear old Bloody Island. Because dueling at that point was illegal in Illinois. So that's probably the Missouri site that is.
I'm looking at, I just did a quick search for Bloody Island, and there's one, it looks like it's on the mainland. It doesn't look like an island.
Oh, maybe the river has kind of changed over the years.
Oh, but maybe.
Yeah, but it was there just off of, between Alton and whatever that part of Missouri that is.
Oh, I'm looking at the wrong side of the state. I got to go down a little bit. All right, so that's an awesome story. Abe Lincoln challenge to a duel. So there were states that allowed duels, and Missouri was one, Illinois was not.
That seems to have been true.
That's great.
I don't know a whole lot about it, but
God love Missouri. If you want a duel, go ahead and duel. I like that he picked broadsword. That's smart. Didn't you tell me he was part of a competition holding axes out? The guy must have had a great forearm on him.
He does, and it's because he did so much manual labor all his life. Actually, there was great tension between Lincoln and his father because his father wanted him to be a farmer and Lincoln mm-hmm. did not. But in any event, when Lincoln visited the soldiers during the Civil War, he would challenge the young men mm-hmm. to have a contest with him. And the contest was to see who could hold an axe straight out from your shoulder mm-hmm. and not have that thing dip one bit. And Lincoln, who at that point was in his 50s, was able to outlast all those soldiers.
Wow.
When he was shot and his body was taken over to the Peterson house, and when they, of course, tore open his shirt, he had the physique, the upper body of a much younger man.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I love the axe game, which still could be something that people could try out. It's not easy to hold your hand out and do these things. I'm just going to give credit to Abe Lincoln. Even as a radio broadcaster, if you're in a situation where you have to hold a microphone out more than 5 minutes, my hand's tired. I can't even do a microphone. He's doing axes and beating all these young kids. Wow, that's impressive.
Some of those boys had come from the farm too, but Abe Lincoln was a strong, physically strong man.
Yeah, I can see why he picked broadsword. He's pretty confident in that.
Lincoln, another kind of little facet is that Lincoln said that he did not lack for moral courage.
Mm-hmm.
He was a little worried about whether he had the physical courage to fight he's very honest and said, of course, he had been a soldier in the Black Hawk War, but that lasted about 3 months. And as he said later on, about all they fought were mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
But he, like everyone else, I think, had some question about when the time came, how it would be with the physical courage that those boys had to show.
Are there any misconceptions, things that we may commonly know about Abe Lincoln or stories that people have brought up that might not be historically accurate?
Well, you asked me that, and you know, since I've been so deeply immersed in the young Lincoln, I think the Springfield years and the presidency, I'm sure there are loads of them there. In fact, I was first drawn to Lincoln mm-hmm. by a friend who said I should read Carl Sandburg.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did read Carl Sandburg, and I'm a slow reader, but I just barreled through the 6 volumes of Carl Sandburg, mm-hmm. which I dearly loved. Unfortunately, I found about 10 years later that half of it is true.
Only half.
It's a slight problem, right? But actually, the little story, you mentioned that, and here's a little thing for you that's kind of fun, is that in the preface to the book, Lincoln writes or tells this when he's in the president, and he said, one fellow told me I was so ugly, I had no business running for the state legislature. I was called two-faced so often that I replied, if I had another one, do you think I'd be wearing this face? Now that's a great, great story.
Yeah.
And when it came time in some of these places, I should say as well in the book, there are some places where Lincoln, actually the words of Abraham Lincoln are in this story.
Mm-hmm.
Now I note that in the back and all the footnotes so the reader will know where that happens. But when it came time for this one, and I really tried desperately to track it down, the story about the two-faced thing. And I went down every internet rabbit hole I could, and I couldn't find anything. And in fact, at the bottom of the most distant rabbit hole was a word that came up, spurious. Well, on the other hand, I've been blessed by having two Lincoln Scholar friends who have just helped me all the way through. The first one was my first Lincoln Scholar friend. That's Robert Bray, mm-hmm. who was at Illinois Wesleyan, a Lincoln Scholar, highly respected. And the next one is Michael Burlingame. Michael Burlingame wrote for the Lincoln bicentennial of his birth in 2009, a 2-volume biography of Lincoln that stands, I think, as the work on it. And Michael has researched them all. And at one point I said to Michael, have you been able to track down the two-faced reference? And he said, not yet.
You have to keep looking. This is like a treasure hunt. When did he grow the beard?
Well, that's, I think there are some myths about that too. The specifics of it, I think he had probably decided that he might, when he went to Washington, he grows it on his way to Washington.
I see.
He grows it after he's elected. Now, there is a story that a girl, Grace Bedell, I think Grace Bedell was from either Ohio or Pennsylvania, wrote him a letter and said, you really should grow a beard. You look really wonderful in a beard. And so on the train trip from Springfield to Washington, he stopped in a number of places across Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, And in one of those towns, Grace Bedell, he met her, and she stroked his beard, and he gave her credit for being the person that caused him to grow the beard. I think he'd probably decided before that that it might be might make him look a little wiser when he went to Washington.
Steven Spielberg, is he the one that did the Abe Lincoln movie that came out a few years back? Did you like that one?
I did like it. Now it's a and a lot of my friends in the Lincoln community like it as well. I think I'd say this in Daniel Day-Lewis and his portrait, we will never get anything like that again. That is the closest that we'll ever have of what Lincoln was probably like.
He's one of the world-class actors that you can't top him if he's going to take a role like that.
And he did. Now, there are a couple places in the movie, I think, where at one point Lincoln slaps Robert because Robert is desperate to go into the war, and Lincoln has such pressure from Mary, he didn't want to do it, and he slaps Robert across the... That did not happen.
Yeah.
At the same time, there was a scene right after that about how Abe and Mary are almost having a Virginia Woolf-like argument in the White House. That didn't happen.
Hmm.
And then the last one is that at one point, Spielberg has Lincoln kind of puffing himself up in front of them and saying, "You will get me the votes."
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't happen.
Mm.
Bob Bray tells me, and he's absolutely right, that when Lincoln was president, he was the first person in any meeting to check his ego at the door.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, one part of that movie that I remember, and I only saw a portion of the movie, they would be able to talk to, you would could wait in line in the hallway and get called into the Oval Office. Like, you would be able to just walk into the White House with a grievance and have a chance to talk to the President of the United States.
Oh, that's absolutely right. No, that's right.
It's amazing to me.
Yeah, he called them his public opinion baths.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it was from about 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, twice a week. Yeah.
So another movie that came out, I don't know how accurate this one was, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Is that pretty accurate?
I have to admit, I haven't seen that one.
it's up there with Sharknado, from what I understand, when it comes to accuracy. Jan Jacoby is our guest. We're going to hang around for one more segment. And the book is called Young Lincoln, a great book. And it's one that documents and tells the story as if you are. It's almost like you're there, the way these stories are told. And this is great if you have a young one, 6th, 7th, 8th grade. This is perfect for them, too. We're going to continue our conversation next on Overnight America KMOX. And one last time with author Jan Jacoby, and the book is called Young Lincoln. What a great way to introduce history in one of the greatest figures, American figures, one of the figures in the entire world, really, with Abraham Lincoln, and make it fascinating for a younger generation to learn about them. Maybe it's, you know, less political and more storytelling, and that's good too. If people wanted to check out Young Lincoln, Jan Jacoby, the author, in the studio now, where can people find the book?
Well, Ryan, it is in local bookstores. Subterranean Books on the Loop is one of my favorites. Novel Neighbor has
it. Yeah,
Left Bank has it.
Oh, Left Bank.
I think it's in some Barnes & Nobles, but if all else fails, Reedy Press is reedypress.com or Amazon.
Did Lincoln have a best friend?
He did have a best friend. His name was Joshua Speed. When Lincoln first gets to Springfield, he meets a young man named Joshua Speed. They could become very close. At the time at which they're both bellying up to the idea of marrying, Speed is a little hesitant, and Lincoln kind of helps him through that, and vice versa. Speed is very close to Lincoln as he makes the decision to marry himself. Unfortunately, they split over the issue of slavery. Speed came from Kentucky. At one point, Lincoln had been, when he first was engaged to Mary Todd, he pulled back and broke the engagement, very depressed, and Joshua Speed invited him to come to his plantation in Kentucky, and they really bonded through that experience. But later on, as the Lincoln later years in Springfield, on into the war in Washington. Now, he did see speed from time to time, and particularly at a very poignant moment in the summer of 1864.
Mm. So the book, Young Lincoln, again, before we wrap up for the hour, and I'm so glad you joined us here for the entire hour to talk about it. Author Jan Jacoby, who would enjoy this book? Maybe you can tell me who would be the perfect fit to pick this one up.
Oh, I'm going to say everyone. Ryan has a four-year-old child.
Yeah.
He can read it when his son is ready. It's time. He can read it aloud. Elementary school, middle school, high school, and adults have enjoyed it too. One of my favorite experiences was teaching it to lifelong learning at Washington University.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we had a wonderful group, and we're going to do it again this February.
Yeah, it's a labor of love, and you said you're going to work on book number two sometime in the future?
Absolutely. I hope that we'll have book two ready. I make a prediction for Lincoln's birthday, 2022.
Wow, that's the prediction. So you have a crystal ball or... It's a lot of work. How long did it take to write this one?
It's 7 years to do this.
Yeah. So you're really expediting this process.
I'm going to move ahead. And Josh and I, Josh Stevens at Reedy, have decided that we're going to do the middle years in two volumes, two books.
Because this one's doing so well.
It's doing very well.
You're doing great. So it sounds like you're fast-tracked. Next time when you present a book to them at Reedy Press, they're going to say, absolutely. No more having to come back and haggle or anything like that. Well, I'm so glad you decided to come in studio. Again, one more time, all the local bookstores have a copy of Young Lincoln. You can check it out there. If they don't have a copy, go to a local bookstore and ask for it. That's all you need to do.
Ryan, I can't thank you enough. It's been an absolute treat. And for your listeners, I've offered to come back next February on Lincoln's birthday. And it's been such fun to talk Lincoln with Ryan. That let's do it.
Thank you, author Jan Jacoby. Thank you so much for coming in.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.